Chapter 30. Yasna, 7. With the duels finished and the awards bestowed, there was little for the men to do but drink. As the hour grew late, the feast hall slowly drained of participants, the feasters trickling off to the sitting rooms. Those who remained in the main hall were subdued, their drunkenness leading to stupor and lethargy. Yasna's table, or rather, the queen's table, was mostly empty. The women sat in clandestine conferences, their seating rearranged now that formality had broken down. Many of the less important women had retired, and many of the more important had moved to more suitable locations for evening conferences. On the next day there would be further feasting and dueling, but the main events had already occurred. Those men who had important duties could be on their way, though, from the looks of many, it would be well into mid-afternoon before they considered leaving. 7 hours of duels, interspersed by the near catastrophe with the madman Taln and her frustration at Shinri's disappearance, had provided Yasna with little insight into her problems. There were only 3 ways to break the forced betrothal. The first required Elokar's permission, which was unlikely. The second was to join the monastery, the Order of Chonra accepted women. The third was to have Meridas's mother forbid the union. Neither prospect looked very appealing. Joining the monastery would require Yasna to forsake all political aspirations and worldly possessions, not to mention require her to join the service of a religion she did not endorse. The second was highly unlikely. Through the marriage, Meridas's family would secure ties to the royal Kolin line. Even if Yasna were to engage in some extreme scandal, such as taking an illicit lover, she doubted Meridas's kin would renounce the union. Besides, even if Yasna were to persuade them to break the engagement, Nanava would still have her right of decision. There would be many an aspiring lord willing to marry the king's sister, no matter how unappealing Yasna made the union. Even if Yasna put her displeasure with Meridas aside for the moment, she found herself frustrated. The queen's maneuvers made very little political sense. Why would Nanava marry Yasna to such a powerful man? Why manipulate Elokar into renouncing Jezenrosh? It made no sense. Perhaps Nanava had heard about the assassins. That could be a valid reason for removing Jezenrosh from his position, thereby weakening the man's claim to the throne. It was a move Yasna herself might have considered, had she been in Nanava's place. Could the moves be nothing more than spousal duty? Why then did Yasna feel so strongly that she was missing something? Yasna shook her head, rising to retreat from the 11th hall. Nelshenden stood by the wall, waiting dutifully as always. His loyalty to Shenares was unwavering. The Way of Kings spoke disapprovingly of any excess, including drunkenness, and it would take a royal edict to get Nelshenden to have more than a single glass of wine at an evening feast. As she stepped out of the room, a familiar figure appeared in the hallway, making his way toward the 11th hall. Kemnar was not dressed like a nobleman. His cloak was of rough shenna with no dyes, his clothing a simple vest smock tied over a pair of ragged trousers. His eyes glistened with urgency. "You found something?" Yasna said eagerly, pulling the man aside as he joined them in the outside hallway.
"The assassins are here,"
Kemnar replied, pulling out a purse.
"In the city. I had to use nearly every gem you gave me to figure out where."
He gave the purse to Nelshenden, who handled all of Yasna's finances. The two soldiers knew better than to try and hand her gemstones, even currency.
"That was it, then."
Balinmar was right. Ralmaha was wrong.
"Where are they?"
Yasna demanded.
"They're posing as a merchant company," Kemnar explained.
"You know when they plan to strike?" Yasna asked hopefully.
Kemnar shook his head. This is a clever group, my lady, very professional, very well established. They don't make mistakes, and even the most important crime lords know not to ask too many questions. Yasna folded her arms, tapping her foot in frustration. What's the name of their merchant front?
The Chanal Group, out of Palinar, Kemnar replied.
Yasna froze. She'd heard that name before. She thought back, trying to clear the muddled events of 2 months of intrigue. Chanal. Her eyes widened in surprise. That was the name of the company in the treasury logs, the one Nanava had been purchasing emeralds from. An irregularly large number of emeralds at an irregularly high price.
By the winds, Yasna whispered.
Now, Shendon, gather my guards, and as many of the royal guard as you can persuade to come with you.
Now, Shendon frowned.
Now, my lady?
Yasna paused. You're betrothed now, she thought to herself. The next few days will be filled with marriage preparations. Elokar will never believe your allegations, not without proof, and you won't be in a position to go out on your own. Move now, or not at all.
Yes, she said. Immediately.
The queen wants my brother dead, Yasna said in a hushed tone. Kemnar and Nell Shendon sat across from her in the hand-drawn carriage. The streets were empty enough this late at night to allow for such a bulky vehicle. They'd gathered about 30 soldiers, including her own, and the group marched alongside the vehicle. Hopefully it would be enough.
That's a dangerous claim, my lady,
Nell Shendon said solemnly, his face shadowed in the dark carriage.
The emerald purchases weren't meant to drive up the market, Yasna explained. They were a payoff, a way for Nanava to transfer a large amount of money to the assassins without drawing attention to herself, and without having to delve into her own pockets. Ironically, my brother funded his own assassination.
But why, my lady?
Nell Shendon said, shaking his head.
She has power, she has rank, and she has the king's ear. Killing him accomplishes nothing.
Unless she wishes another to take his place, Yasna said. A lover no one, not even women of court, has discovered.
Who?
Nell Shendon asked with a frown.
Meridas, Yasna said.
Kemnar frowned.
That's a stretch, my lady.
Is it? Yasna asked.
He's now a Parshan, and betrothed to the king's sister. That's not a large step away from the throne.
Kemnar sat thoughtfully for a moment.
Not a stretch to believe, he finally admitted. But a stretch to prove. We have had no hint of an affair.
We'll find one tonight, Yasna said.
Kemnar looked appreciative.
Assuming you're right, they'd have to get rid of you after they kill the king. They'll probably wait a short time, a year or so. With you out of the way, Nanava and Meridas could make their union official. My lady, Nell Shendon said, we should not be acting on this alone. I repeat my objection from before. We should bring your concerns to the king. It is the proper way.
That's very honorable of you, Nell Shendon,
Yasna replied.
But you just pointed out that Nanava has the king's ear. What proof do I have?
Some figures in a ledger? Speculation?
We need more.
Nell Shendon did not look satisfied.
You should not have come, my lady.
You know me better than that, Nell Shendon, she replied. Don't worry. I'll remain in the carriage until the assault is finished.
Yes,
Nell Shendon said, as the carriage pulled to a stop.
But we'll have to leave men behind to protect you.
He and Kemnar hopped out of the vehicle, landing quietly on the street. Yasna had given orders to stop a block from the Chanal Guildhouse. As her men made their preparations, a stern face approached her carriage window. Lord Zanach, second captain of her brother's personal guard, was an aging man she couldn't remember ever having seen smile. His reputation for sobriety was legendary. Only Nell Shendon could have convinced him to agree to such a clandestine operation. His eyes, however, warned that he would go no farther without good cause.
"We're here, my lady," he said, in an even but unyielding voice. "Now you will tell me what this is about."
"There is a group of assassins posing as merchants in that building, Captain," Jasnah explained. "They have a contract on the king."
"This is about Lord Jezenrosh?"
the captain asked, eyeing the dark building. "You've heard about that?" Jasnah asked. Zenach looked back at her.
"Yes."
"You take the threat seriously?"
"It is my duty to take all threats seriously," the man replied.
He strode away to confer with Nell Shendon and Kemnar. A few moments later, Kemnar and four men retreated to the carriage, surrounding it, Jasnah, and the four pullers in a loose circle. The other 25 men drew their weapons and approached the building, splitting into three groups. Overhead, the stars sat in stoic regard, most of them concentrated in an enormous cluster the monks called the Dwelling. They gave little light this day. The Dwelling was low on the horizon, and Jasnah quickly lost sight of her men in the darkness. Then all was still. Seconds passed as heartbeats, then gathered into minutes which pulled on her nerves like weights on a string. Finally, a group of three men returned from the building. One was Nell Shendon. Jasnah didn't wait. She climbed from the carriage and approached him with a rushed step.
"The guild house was empty," the guard said. "They cleaned out, taking all of their gear. Only one watchman stayed behind."
"You captured him?" Jasnah asked hopefully.
"Barely," Nell Shendon said. "He had a trapdoor out the back. Zenach caught him."
"Take me to him," Jasnah ordered.
"I don't know anything," the man exclaimed. "I'm just a scratch."
"What's a scratch?" Jasnah asked, turning toward Kemnar.
"A local man," Kemnar explained, "hired from outside the organization to provide experience in the region."
Jasnah nodded. Two lanterns showed that Nell Shendon had been right. The building was empty. The rooms had been stripped of all ornamentation and personal effects, leaving behind only a few tables and chairs, one of which held the prisoner. He was a wiry, nondescript man, and his nervousness seemed a little too exaggerated. Kemnar approached the assassin, leaning down with a threatening look. Jasnah watched with folded arms, Nell Shendon and Zenach standing beside her. The room's only other occupants were the two lantern-bearing soldiers.
"You do know something," Kemnar said, drawing his knife.
The well-made steel, created from an awakened alloy to be stronger than regular metals, glistened in the lantern light. It was a stabbing weapon, designed to get through the faceplate of a shard-bearer.
"I swear by the 10th name of the Almighty,"
the assassin whispered, cowering.
"They didn't tell me anything."
Kemnar leaned down closer, putting the tip of the weapon against the man's neck.
"I realize this isn't a group one betrays lightly," Kemnar whispered. "But they're not here. I am."
The point of the weapon drew blood.
"Kemnar," Nell Shendon said, "you are not to hurt him."
Kemnar sighed, standing and shooting a dry look at Nell Shendon. He stepped back to Jasnah, speaking in a quiet voice.
"He is going to make this very difficult, my lady." "We must follow Shenaraz," Nell Shendon said. "We have nothing if we have not honor."
"Nell Shendon," Jasnah said, "this assassin has knowledge that might save our king's life."
"Better we risk the king than betray our souls, my lady," Nell Shendon said.
The words were not spoken lightly. His eyes bore a weight of decision.
"If we follow what is right, The Almighty will see us to victory.
The Almighty, Yasna thought. Wonderful.
Kemnar turned, eyeing the prisoner.
He's no simple scratch, Kemnar said. He puts on a good show, but a group like this wouldn't hire someone they didn't think was trustworthy and able to withstand a little torture. I can probably break him, but it will take time. Maybe days.
Kemnar paused, eyeing the captive, then turned back.
The thing is, my lady, we might not have days. There are only two reasons the assassins would have abandoned this building. Either they thought they'd been discovered, or the assassination is planned for tonight.
You think they would attack the king in the middle of a dueling competition?
Nelshenden asked, skeptically.
Do you have any idea how many shard bearers there are in the palace right now?
Blades and plate don't protect against a knife in bed, Nelshenden,
Kemnar said.
Besides, half the palace has drunk themselves silly. I doubt most of those shard bearers even remember their own names right now.
Zenach swore quietly, breaking his silence.
He's right, my lady, he said. Those palace guards who weren't on duty participated in the duels. And with all the shard bearers around, we let a good number of them off. We're as understaffed as you'll ever find us.
Then we have to assume that the king is in danger, Yasna said.
Captain, take your men and mine and return to the palace as quickly as possible. I want you to gather every guard and shard bearer you can to protect the king. My captains and I will stay here and see what we can gather from the captive. We'll join you if we discover anything.
Zenach's only response was a curt nod. His two men put down the lanterns, and all three were out the door in a matter of seconds.
Yasna remained, Kemnar and Nelshenden beside her, regarding the captive.
Kemnar was right. They didn't have days to wait. They may not even have minutes.
There was a way.
The thought entered Yasna's head idly, then refused to leave. She could place a stress upon this man's soul that no simple physical torture could equal.
No,
Yasna thought. I will find another way.
But what?
Even if she persuaded Nelshenden to let the torture progress, it was unlikely they would discover any information in time. She could make him break. There was one thing every Rosharan feared more than threats, more than pain. She resisted the option, but it would not depart her mind. She kept thinking of Elokar, a man who was, to her, little more than a boy trying so hard to be king. What was more important? His life? Her soul?
Nelshenden,
Yasna said quietly, holding out her hand.
Give me a gemstone.
My lady?
Nelshenden asked with surprise.
Do it, she said.
The soldier quietly pulled open his money pouch, selecting a gem and placing it in her hand. The ruby was covered with a light glass glaze and stamped with the seal of Alethkar, declaring it to be worth 50 ishmarks. As soon as the stone touched her hand, Yasna could hear its tone. The note sounded powerfully in her ears, even through the glass.
Could she do it? What would Kemnar and Nelshenden think if they knew? Like monks, awakeners were required to forsake wealth and privilege. But unlike monks, awakeners were also ostracized, removed from their families, feared, shut away. They were strange, inhuman creatures. Their arts changed them. People whispered that awakening didn't just change them. It stole their souls. It took from them their humanity.
Yasna closed her eyes and held up the ruby. If she concentrated, she could hear another sound coming from within her. Her soul tone. Unlike the ruby, her soul tone didn't give off a simple note. It produced a brilliant vibrating chord. It was her own unique harmonic, usually so quiet she couldn't hear it. She reached out with her soul tone
the familiar chord growing louder somehow, though she knew she didn't hear it with her physical ears. She took the soul tone and touched it against the ruby, stroking its tone like a finger upon the strings of an instrument. Her soul tone gave strength to the ruby's music, amplifying it, making its pure, solitary note grow in force and strength. The ruby shivered in her hand. It began to vibrate with a soft hum that would be audible even to non-awakener ears. She heard Nelshenden gasp. She opened her eyes as the vibrating gemstone shattered its glass glazing. The gem began to glow with a pure red light, rising into the air above her hand, illuminating the room with a faceted Rubicon glow. The prisoner watched mutely, eyes widening. Then he screamed, struggled against his bonds, pulling ineffectually against the ropes tying his arms and legs to the chair. Gone was his false anxiety and overdone cowering. "Speak," Yasna ordered, holding her hand forward, the gemstone vibrating and spinning above it. "I know nothing," the man screamed. Yasna turned her hand to the side, palm facing toward the far wall, the ruby spinning and glowing before it. She nudged the ruby with a stroke of her mind, flipping it through the air toward the room's lone table. The gemstone struck the wooden table, shattering into a shower of red dust, transferring its vibration to the wood itself. The strike sounded loudly, like a sharp pop, within Yasna's mind. She grabbed a hold of the table's tone, a chord far less complex than that of a living creature. Normally, non-gems had tones far too weak to notice, but the ruby's explosion brought the table's tone to life, like a bell suddenly struck by an iron rod. Yasna held tightly to the table's tone, which vibrated irregularly, its own tone struggling against that of the ruby. If she did nothing, the table would cast off the ruby's tone, returning to its natural state. However, Yasna refused to let that happen. She pushed, hearing and remembering the ruby's tone in her mind, forcing the table's tone to change, to become a uniform note instead of a chord. It had been years since she had awakened, and her abilities were weak. She strained against the table's tone, the departed ruby's note hanging and vibrating in her mind. For a moment she could see beyond the table's form. She glimpsed past sight, feeling the table's pure substance, the Lhel from which all things were created. The Lhel of the table pushed against her. She pushed back, forcing its tone to change and match that of the ruby. The wood became fire. It didn't burn like a blaze started from logs, but was immediately remade into flame. The table exploded with a large roaring sound, a blossom of fire illuminating the room, throwing heat against Yasna's face, scarring the stone walls with black soot. Then the flame was gone. She could hear Nelshenden whispering a prayer to the Almighty. The prisoner was crying. Yasna's soul cord vibrated erratically, sending a shiver of pain through her body. The force with which she had pushed against the table returned upon her, and for a brief moment, her own tone threatened to change and become like that of the ruby. Yasna had to seize her tone quickly, holding it stable, forcing it back toward regularity. She took a few deep breaths. "Nelshenden," she finally said. "Another gemstone. A ruby, if you have one." Nelshenden was lethargic, but he eventually complied, pulling out another 50 Ishmark gem. Yasna gritted her teeth, still fighting to keep her tone stable. "I'd forgotten how hard this was," Yasna thought. Her very bones seemed to vibrate, sending pain through her body. If she released control, her Lhel would adopt the note she had just awakened, and she herself would disappear in a burst of flame. "I undertook the Charan," the prisoner sobbed.
You can't affect me with awakening. That's what we tell you, Yasna said, holding forth the ruby again. I'm just a scratch, the man said. They didn't even tell me who the hit was until this afternoon. They left an hour ago, told me to watch the building and report if anyone came looking for them. Honestly, I don't know anything.
Clenching her jaw against the pain and the danger, Yasna stroked the second ruby. It began to glow.
That's all I know, the man promised. They hired me about a month ago. All they did was look around the city, get to know the layout of the castle. The first time we did anything was last night.
What did you do? Yasna demanded.
We hit a group of men traveling to the city, the man said. I just stood watch. They did the killing. I didn't know they were shard bearers, honestly.
Shard bearers? Yasna asked, surprised, lowering the gemstone. It popped ineffectually, spraying her hand with red dust. The man nodded in his bonds, eyes closed, shivering slightly as he wept.
Took them in their sleep, two of them with their guards. We buried the guards, but they took the bodies of the noblemen. I don't know what they wanted with them.
Two shard bearers. Where was the group you attacked traveling from?
Crossguard,
the man whispered. By the winds, Yasna said, spinning toward her two stunned guard captains. You two wake up. Worry about my awakening later. Nelshenden shook his head, coming out of his stupor, regarding her with eyes that were alarmingly distrustful.
Two shard bearers, Nelshenden, Yasna said. From Crossguard. The assassins killed Jezan Rosh's delegation and took its place. They replaced his shard bearers with two young men who could claim to have been elevated so recently that no one in court would recognize them.
By the Almighty, Kemnar exclaimed.
That's where the rumors of Jezan Rosh's plotting came from, Yasna said. Nanava doesn't just want to kill my brother, she wants to blame it on Jezan Rosh.
And the assassins have rooms in the Aleth section of the palace, Nelshenden whispered. A few doors down from those of the king himself.